Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, it was a visit full of royal pageantry at Windsor, ending in a formal bilateral meeting at Chequers. Donald Trump's second state visit to the United Kingdom had all the hallmarks of a carefully planned and thought out affair. The US president and his wife, Melania, were treated to full military honours, yet kept well away from central London, where large demonstrations might otherwise dominate the coverage. Well, let's get more on how it all played out with Mark Paul, London correspondent for the Irish Times. Good morning, Mark. We were watching it unfold from afar. You were right in the thick of it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was there at Chequers yesterday, which is the Prime Minister's country retreat out in the Buckinghamshire countryside. And that's where the bilateral meeting was held between President Trump and Keir Starmer. And I suppose, but look, it felt almost like more of a royal meeting, I think, than what went on in Windsor the previous day. I mean, the press conference, which was the moment of maximum danger for Keir Starmer, where, you know, Donald Trump could go off script and say something completely mad, or where he could openly disagree with Keir Starmer, that took place in what's known as the Great Hall in Chequers. And, you know, Chequers is a stately old home, and there's pictures of King Henry VIII and everybody looking down at you. And I thought the entrance of Donald Trump into the room alone was more regal than anything King Henry VIII could have wished for. I mean, his entire entourage stood on their feet and clapped him in. And clearly this is something that happens in every room. I mean, I was kind of studying Keir Starmer's face as this was happening, you know, probably one of the most unpopular politicians in Britain at the moment. And you know, to see his partner in politics, his transatlantic partner, walk in and be treated like a king in the United Kingdom, I think was interesting in itself.
Who was doing the clapping? These are people from the administration, not the American press.
Not the American press, although there were some members of the press who were obviously very pro-Trump. So the likes of Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and the likes of Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, Susan Wiles, Trump's Chief of Staff, and his Head of Press Relations, Caroline Lieber. And all of those people, they stood on their feet and they applauded them in and gave Donald Trump a standing ovation just as he walked into the room. And this is clearly something that happens everywhere he goes.
And tell me about the American press, because we're intrigued by this. We know in the Oval Office they're more or less handpicked. And was it the same at Chequers yesterday?
Yeah. I mean, the questions from the American press were the journalists who chosen to ask the questions were chosen by Trump himself. I mean, he was playing up to the crowd a little bit, Trump. The first question that he chose was actually from the US correspondent for GB News. So that was a good crossover. But another journalist that he chose was the journalist who in the Oval Office previously infamously upbraided Vladimir Zelensky for not wearing a suit. That guy was chosen to ask a question.
Brian Glenn, isn't it?
That's right. He was chosen to ask a question. So I mean, you know, the White House press pool was treated maybe a little bit better than the British press. They were brought into the room ahead of everybody else, and they had all their seats guaranteed. And when we come in, those of us who were accredited on the British side, half of us had to stand down the back like we were at mass in the old days. Okay. So it was the White House press pool was definitely got the more gilded treatment.
Yeah, because he said, I saw some comments from him this morning when he landed back. He was saying that he felt the British press were very nice.
Yeah, they were. I mean, like, the elephant in the room was the Peter Mandelson question. And we got through 40 minutes of a press conference, and that popped up in the last question, which was from Beth Rigby of Sky News. And she literally called it the elephant in the room. I mean, it was the one thing that everybody was scared everybody in the British side was scared could be a point of difference, was the sacking of Mandelson last week and a scandal of it. And Beth Rigby threw it in at the end. And I think there was relief all around on the UK government side that these things hadn't been made more an issue of. I think maybe, not to criticise my colleagues in the British press, but there is an element of the spectacle with Donald Trump. And, you know, everybody, it's very rarely you see members of the Westminster lobby taking selfies outside an event, but they were. So this regal-esque kind of aura that swings around Donald Trump, I think it affects everybody to certain degrees, yeah. whether we admit it or not.
It's interesting because we had Bonnie Greer on the programme yesterday, and she said this is akin to a panto. Everybody's in on the joke apart from Donald Trump. Everybody has a role to play. Was that the sense that you got of the entire visit?
Yeah, there was. I do think Donald Trump did have a certain amount of self-awareness though yesterday as well in the press conference. I actually thought, and I didn't expect to feel this way after, but I was actually reasonably impressed with his diplomacy and political skills in the press conference himself. I mean, there were certain questions that were lobbed at him that it would have been easy to turn into criticisms of Britain or of his host Keir Starmer, and he very, very diplomatically batted them away. He dealt with the Mandelson question by claiming, quite funnily, I thought, that he had never even heard of Peter Mandelson, yes, which is ridiculous, yes, because he knows him well. Also, as well, he was very clear in pointing out that he differed with Keir Starmer on recognising and Palestine as a state. But again, he smoothed that over quite skillfully by clapping Keir Starmer on the back when Keir Starmer made mention of the fact that Hamas should never be in government. So I thought Donald Trump was on his game yesterday. He played along and he played along quite kindly for Keir Starmer. And that made the whole press conference experience maybe a bit more sedate and placid than I expected it to be.
So was it seen then as a win for the UK government overall?
Definitely, if you account enormous overwhelming relief that it didn't go wrong as a win, then yes, it was a win. There were so many potential banana skins there for Keir Starmer, and he stood on so many banana skins over the last couple of weeks with the loss of Angela Rayner and the loss of Peter Mandelson, that one more, I think, he really would have could have started to be, begun to lose his grip on his parliamentary party. So I think Keir Starmer got away with it, and they put on the trip, they brought the glitz and the glamour. He again got to be the statesman. But they didn't mess anything up too badly. But one thing that did shine out from it is that although he gets on well, very clearly gets on very well with Donald Trump on a person-to-person level, he still doesn't have the ability to change Trump's mind on anything. And I think that's kind of serious when you look at the big issues like Gaza and Ukraine that the two men are going to be talking about, that if you can't change Trump's mind, well, then what's the point?
Well, Donald Trump clearly, he seems to put up with Keir Starmer. Maybe that's not fair. They get on well, but it's sort of a superficial friendship or relationship. But he is completely enamoured with the royal family, isn't he?
He is. I mean, and I guess that's because he probably sees himself in a little bit of a regal sense himself. I mean, he probably sees himself as a kind of the first king of the United States of America. So yeah, I mean, his language about King Charles is very effusive, and he opened a press conference yesterday by saying what a great guy he was, or a great king he was, what a great queen Camilla is, and he used himself and his wife Melania in the same sentence as the king and queen of Britain on numerous occasions. So I think he sees himself amongst peers when he's talking about royalty. Mm-hmm.
Just going back to the Peter Mandelson question from Beth Rigby, and when Donald Trump said, I don't know him. Now, last night, Sky were playing the clip of Peter Mandelson and Donald Trump in the Oval Office having a great conversation and being very familiar with each other. What does it tell us that nobody in the room said, well, you clearly do know him, and here's how we know that you know him?
Well, asking follow-up questions with Donald Trump is not quite as easy as it is with the British press. I think he's much more media astute, I think, than a lot of British politicians. And when he could see a follow-up question coming, he would cut across and answer ahead of the follow-up question, if you know what I mean. He would try to head it off the pass. But there was no follow-up question asked from the Westminster lobby, really, about Peter Mandelson, because it was left so late. And I think it was because Donald Trump, a lot of the time, he talked down the clock. But just any punches that were thrown at him, they just weren't seeming to land at all. So I just think Donald Trump is a lot cleverer on his feet at press conferences than perhaps we give him credit for when we're looking down a TV screen from the far side of the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. He actually reasonably impressed me as a politician in yesterday's room.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting listening to Howard Lutnick speaking as well to that business lobby which was organised. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, we want to see Britain looking towards us, looking over towards the United States, doing things as we do it. We don't want you looking towards Europe. And he was talking in particular about regulation of the tech sector. It felt a bit threatening, a bit like a warning. You've got to know which side your bread is buttered on here.
Well, that's it. I mean, obviously, the MAGA universe and the US as it is now under the Republicans, it sees the European Union as a great rival, just as it sees China as a great rival. And so Britain has to pick its side from MAGA's point of view. And there is this sense in US-UK relations at the moment that the MAGA universe, so to speak, when it fixes in the United States, they're going to turn their attention towards Britain. And like, if you see already the involvement of US politicians in British politics, politics. Elon Musk, who's not a politician but is very interested in UK politics, JD Vance constantly making interjections on free speech in Britain. They see Britain as another broken vessel, just like they've portrayed the US to be. And I think that's a very, very interesting dynamic in the MAGA UK relationship at the moment.
Okay, well, it's very interesting to get your perspective on it, Mark. Thanks for joining us. Mark Paul there, who's London correspondent with the Irish Times. We're all obsessed with the traitors, aren't we? Well, just about everybody seems to be watching it and is fascinated as to what's going to happen when it comes to an end. How are we going to manage next week? Well, we have anticipating the loss that we're all going to feel when the traitors end. We're going to find the best board games later on to satisfy our deceptive tendencies. That's on the way. Next up, though, we're going to Nashville with Ed Finn.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.